Once the dust settled in a season full of surprises, the committee revealed a familiar playoff bracket featuring Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, and Oklahoma, whom the committee selected over Georgia and Ohio State. Who will win the first round of the playoff? Who will win the other four New Year's Six bowls? And will the committee expand to an 8-team playoff in the near future? Find out on this episode of Stone Cold Sports Talk. Thank you all for tuning in alongside Jay Banzette, Associate Editor of Stone Cold Sports Blog. I am Luke Stone, and we are excited and delighted to be back in the saddle on the podcast.
Oh, I'm beyond happy to be here. Let's get this show on the road. I've been waiting weeks for this.
So, as we mentioned earlier, this is a very familiar playoff bracket. Alabama, Clemson, and Oklahoma were actually in a playoff bracket together just 2 years ago, so they find themselves there again. Notre Dame, the newcomer to the party, we'll talk a little bit later about the merits of the selection process this year, especially with Oklahoma over Georgia, even though a lot of people thought Georgia was a better team, kind of the, I guess, looking at the data side of it and the eye test side of it. Anyway, let's hop right in here to the first semifinal, which is going to be the Cotton Bowl between Notre Dame and Clemson, obviously in Jerry World, if it is the Cotton Bowl.
How about them Cowboys?
we'll also talk about them later, I hope.
Yes.
Jay, who do you think has the advantage in this game?
Well, there's Clemson to me obviously has a clear advantage everywhere except for one area of the field, and that's in the defensive secondary. So the defensive passing game, the Clemson secondary against Notre Dame's offensive attack with Ian Book, who's completing I think around 70% of his passes right now. Very accurate quarterback. He's not the most mobile guy. He's not a Kyler Murray or a Tua Tagovailoa, but he's really accurate and he's really good at what he does. And as much as I hate to say it, as a
Alex
Michigan
Smith
fan,
of college football,
as an anti Notre Dame guy, he's a really good player. But I, Clemson's pass defense, I read today listening to a Joel Klatt video on YouTube about this whole thing. Clemson has given up 2 400-yard passers this year. Jake Bentley of South Carolina threw for over 500.
Who was going to get benched earlier in the season.
In the last week of the regular season. Albeit, he has Debo Samuel, who's a talented first-round draft prospect if he comes out this year. And Kellen Mond at Texas A&M also threw for over 400 yards. So, if Notre Dame has any hope of winning the game, they're going to have to just keep chucking the ball around the backyard and hoping that they can break a couple loose here. Probably once every quarter or so, so you can get 25 yards here or there and keep it close until the fourth quarter and then just see if you can get the ball less and go down and score. But the more I look at it, the more I think Clemson's just going to run away with it in the fourth quarter. I think they've got too much offense for Notre Dame's somewhat limited offensive attack, especially as of recently in their last game, they only scored 24 points against 5-7 USC. Clemson, obviously, last week throttled Pittsburgh in the ACC Championship, scored on the first play from scrimmage and didn't look back. And so I think Clemson should win by, what's the spread, 12.5?
Something like that.
12.5. I expect probably 14, maybe even 17, that based on my judgment and what I've seen from both teams this year.
The way I'm looking at this game is this is really the quintessential 2-3 matchup that you want in the playoff committee, because it has a conference champion like Clemson, who is a clear favorite, but also a really noble challenger in Notre Dame. I don't know if Notre Dame's going to give them a real run for their money yet, but I think they're going to probably have a better chance of beating Clemson than any other teams had this season. Notre Dame,
I agree with that.
Notre Dame, the difference between Notre Dame and really every team in the rest of the top 10 is that when Notre Dame was struggling, they still found ways to pull games out. And that's what separates, I think, playoff teams from non-playoff teams. There are teams that are going to have bad games and bad performances, and what determines whether you make the playoff is if you have what it takes to just kind of keep holding on to that rope and make sure you don't let the game get too far away from you and just claw an inch and do what you need to back to get back into the game. Notre Dame's a very gritty team. They're pretty defensively stingy. Their offense is good enough. I think Dexter Williams is a serviceable running back, and like you said, Ian Book is very accurate. I don't know if they're going to have enough on the outside with the receivers, with Miles Boykin, is that his name?
Yes, Miles Boykin.
Yeah, with Miles Boykin. But against a pass defense that, like you said, was not particularly strong, especially when they got tested by teams that weren't really that good, like South Carolina, offensively.
The other side of that is they completely shut down Ryan Finley and NC State in Death Valley in midway through the season. So they've had polar opposites, and so we'll have to see what kind of pass defense comes out for Clemson. They could have the shutdown version that they put on against the Wolfpack, or they could have the version that they threw on against Texas A&M and South Carolina.
Their consistency in the secondary does worry me, but I think with how this offense has played so far this season, there's not really too much to be concerned about. I think the only way that they're going to lose this game is if Notre Dame keeps it close and possibly takes a lead early. I think if this team falls behind, I don't know how they're going to respond. They fell behind against Syracuse, but that's very different than falling behind against Notre Dame, who's undefeated and read the table in its schedule.
They fell behind against Syracuse. People bring up that game. They lost Trevor Lawrence in the first quarter with a concussion. They didn't have by far... Well, Kelly Bryant had already transferred. They didn't have their freak freshman quarterback, so they had to put in original third-string guy Chase Bryce, who, no disrespect whatsoever, but you're not Trevor Lawrence, okay? He was serviceable.
Well, Felipe Franks isn't even Trevor Lawrence, and Felipe Franks, in my opinion, is a top 10 quarterback in college football now. Just kidding to anyone listening to this. Felipe Franks has gotten better, but I wouldn't put him in the top 10 category yet. So, Jay, let's spin this around. Let's wrap this up. What's your score prediction?
Ooh.
You said 12 or 14, but with offenses like this, it's hard to know if that's going to be like 50 to 36 or a 26 to 12.
Go ahead and give me a 38-24 Clemson.
38-24?
That
seems way too round for a playoff game.
I know, but that just sounds right. Give me that. It's either going to be 38-24 or 41-27. I don't see Notre Dame keeping it within two touchdowns.
I agree. I don't see them keeping it within two touchdowns for most of the game, but I do think that late they'll probably get kind of a garbage time touchdown, so to speak, and I think they'll probably be able to keep it interesting and maybe be a three and out away from having an outside shot. I don't know if Clemson's going to get up to the mid-30s. I'm going to say Clemson 31, Notre Dame 23. Notre Dame scores late to cut it to 8 and then can't get the stop they need to get the ball back against a...
Interesting.
A Clemson offense is just going to feed Travis Etienne when they need to late in the game. So, with that, let's move on to the second semifinal, the Orange Bowl in Miami Gardens, Florida. Miami and Miami Gardens, for those of you who don't know, are about 25 minutes apart, so games never actually happen on South Beach. I saw that something the other day about, they say, and we're back live here in South Beach. It's like, no, actually we're not. We're live back here like 25 miles from South Beach. So Oklahoma against Alabama, the Heisman winner versus the Heisman runner-up. Interesting tidbit, the last Oklahoma quarterback who played one of his runners-up in the very next game in the postseason was Sam Bradford against Tim Tebow, and I think we all know exactly how that one ended up, so it'll be interesting to see how that goes here. These are two of the best scoring offenses in the country. Oklahoma is averaging 49.5 points a game. Alabama is averaging 48. The difference is Alabama is only giving up 15 a game, while Oklahoma is giving up 32 a game. So, Jay, unpack this for us. Kind of who are going to be the key players and what are going to be the key matchups here?
Well, I'll start off with this. I cannot emphasize to you listeners how bad Oklahoma's defense is. I hadn't watched Oklahoma since the Red River rivalry, which they gave up 48 points to Texas in.
And then you watched
West Virginia, Oklahoma. And then I watched the West Virginia Oklahoma game, which I'm writing a blog post or an article about that'll come out probably later this week, early next week. But this defense is absolutely horrendous. I cannot tell you how bad they are without reading you this number right here. Stone, what do you think the number 448 represents?
I would guess passing yards a game with Kyler Murray, maybe?
That's the amount of yards allowed that defense gives up in 60 minutes.
That's pretty ridiculous.
That is horrible. They are ranking 91st in pass defense. 91st.
And they're a Power 5 school with a conference championship in the playoff.
There's 12 teams. And there's 12 teams in a Power 5 conference, and there's 5 conferences. They are 31 spots out of being Power 5 realm. That is horrible on so many levels. You can ask my mom. I was watching the West Virginia-Oklahoma game in my keeping room outside of my kitchen at home, two rooms away from her when she was watching some movie, and I would I would scream out. I about started crying at how bad this football was that was being played on deep by the defenses on both sides. So any of you young football players, you can get a scholarship to play in the Big 12 coming straight out of middle school. I'm dead serious. These dudes,
if you're a defensive player,
these dudes are so bad. Golly, don't get me started. But Bama also looked suspect last week defensively too against Georgia. Sony Michel tore him a new one.
I know, but I don't think Sony Michel is really comparable to Kennedy Brooks. Kennedy Brooks is the 1,000-yard rusher, and he's pretty good. But I don't think that you can compare Sony Michel and Kennedy Brooks. But here's who you can compare. You can compare Kyler Murray and Jake Fromm. You know how you can compare them? Because Kyler Murray is infinitely better than Jake Fromm.
Yes, okay.
That's the only comparison that has to be made. So I think it'll be interesting with Kyler Murray to see what he does against the best defense he will play all year by far, even if they make it to the national championship somehow. So,
I'll add on to that. Kyler Murray, in my opinion, this literally just came to my head. Kyler Murray is the most electric quarterback we've seen since Marcus Mariota in college football.
Probably the most true dual threat and his ability to run the ball. I mean, he
notice how I said that over Lamar Jackson.
Well, the difference was Lamar Jackson didn't play. I mean, was he in the ACC his entire time at?
He was. Yes, he went straight from whatever that high school was at orange and yellow stripe tiger helmets in.
Oh,
South Florida, wherever.
You know what that? You know what that high school was? He went to. I think he went to Pompano. I don't know.
That sounds right. Actually, now
we'll
that you
he's from
that.
Pompano
so
Beach.
So he went straight from Pompano High School in Florida, straight to Louisville.
Palm Beach County people. He's a homegrown.
Yes, and he was electric. Probably he definitely deserved to win the Heisman 2 years in a row. But Baker Mayfield was just phenomenal last year. But Kyler Murray can do so many things.
So well. His height is probably a handicap for him, too, as a quarterback, and he still manages to put incredible speed and
this guy
height on the ball.
If you want to see one play of Kyler Murray, the first play on his highlight reel, go find the Texas game, the first one, in the Texas State Fair. I think it was there's 8 minutes left in the game. Second down and 10. Murray steps up in the pocket. Sprints out to his left, gets upfield, goes about 10 yards, puts the brakes on because he doesn't think anything's there, sees a window about 7 yards on the sideline to the hash and just hits the afterburners and does not get touched and for the 70 yards. This is a quarterback we're talking
about. And
this
is also a quarterback erasing a 21-point deficit or 24-point deficit?
I think it was 24.
24-point deficit in the fourth quarter and taking his team all the way back before Dicker the kicker hit him with the knockout blow.
Yes.
So despite all of that,
my opinion, and he runs a 4.45 40, which is just insane.
Despite all of that, in my opinion, I don't think Oklahoma is going to have a legitimate shot at winning this football game.
There's a shot, and I'll tell you why. Also, on that Joel Klatt video I watched this morning, they said Tua is not necessarily going to be 100% for this game, if he even plays at all. They said he might not play. So, nothing against Jalen Hurts, but you're not Tua Tagovailoa. I know he's not ever going to listen to this. But if he were to.
If Jalen Hurts were a listener of ours,
we call it quits and just say go out on top.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's the whole thing. If we get any athlete above the high school level, in Division II even, I'd take. listening to this, I think that we're in good shape.
Yeah, we go out on top, Peyton Manning style, win the Super Bowl and go out.
Mm-hmm. So talk about drinking Budweiser to get some more sponsorship money, get free things from life.
Yes. So, if Tua plays,
it's over.
I'm not going to say it's over because I'm never going to count out
Kyler Murray.
Lincoln Riley.
That's a good point.
I don't care who he has at quarterback. This guy's worst loss, he was there last year and this year. Only 2 years. His worst loss, what was the Iowa State score last year? 7 points?
I think it was 31-24 or 38-31, yeah.
Yeah. 7 points in 2 years. Last year against Georgia, they put up, I think it was 600 yards of total offense on the number 3 defense in the country.
Who also had Roquan Smith, the first round pick.
Who
could be in the running for defensive rookie of the year.
Who had DeAndre Baker, the Jim Thorpe Award winner for the best DB in the country this year. who could they just shut down Auburn in last year's SEC championship, and Oklahoma goes out and throws them in the woodshed and says, take this, and hangs. What was that final score?
52-50? No.
52-49, let's say it was that. They hung 52, 50-something points on the number three defense in the country with a guy who can't run as well as Kyler Murray. Just think about that. And so I'm not going to count out Oklahoma because of Lincoln Riley and Kyler Murray. And obviously Hollywood Brown is a freak. This is quite literally the only game where he's going to have a receiver on the other side who's better than he is, and that's Jerry Jeudy for Bama.
And I think this will probably also be one of the few games that Oklahoma will play where they probably are evenly matched at running back. I mean, I don't think there's any running back on that team that's better than Kennedy Brooks, but I don't know who else they have that Oklahoma has in the backfield, but I do know that Damian Harris, Najee Harris, and Josh Jacobs are a 1-2-3 punch that is really, really effective and can kind of wear down defenses because there's a guy with fresh legs running up at you up the gut every time.
Well, Oklahoma does stand a chance. Trey Sermon is a really talented true sophomore running back for Oklahoma. He stepped in last year at some points in the Rose Bowl when Nick Chubb and Sony Michel were out fatigued. Specifically in the second quarter, I think it was, he broke a 15-yard runoff and absolutely ran right through a Georgia corner as a true freshman, just ran literally just smacked through him. And so,
I'm guessing you mean Rodney Anderson and Kennedy Brooks, not Sony Michel and Nick Chubb. You said when they were worn out, but you're talking about the running back.
That's my fault. Yes, Rodney Anderson. Yeah, who? I know he's not here because he's hurt. But if Rodney Anderson were playing,
I think it's a level playing field.
It's absolutely a level playing field. That guy is going first round, if not early second round, if not first round.
Yeah, that's an example of injuries totally derailing, or not derailing, but derailing a shot at a top 15 pick or top 16 pick.
Yes, that guy was freaking out, but he's not playing, so let's get back to who actually is playing. I think Oklahoma certainly has the capability to keep it close with their offense, but that defense is just horrible. You can't throw them in a snow. You can't throw them outside and tell them to stop a breeze. It's to build a building. I mean, you got to be kidding me. They can't catch a cold, a common cold right now.
Oh. Everyone's catching a common cold too. It's flu season. Get your shots, people.
Yes.
So
it's as a defensive person, aspiring defensive coordinator in a couple years, and a Mike linebacker right now on a high school team. I have a hard time watching this Oklahoma defense. It is beyond bad.
As a person that enjoys watching high-flying offensive games, I think I'm going to really enjoy this one. My final score prediction, with or without Tua, I think Jalen is good enough, and I think his running backs are good enough.
I think Tua is going to end up playing.
My score prediction is going to be Alabama 52, Oklahoma...
Only 52?
Only 52. Alabama 52, Oklahoma, let's say 39. I think the spread's 14, so smart money's at Oklahoma covering narrowly, but I don't know. I wouldn't quote me on that, especially if Tua plays.
I'm going to throw you on some shock and awe. Bama 63, Oklahoma 52.
Wow. That is some shock and awe. So now let's go.
I'm going to cry during that game because
I'm going to cry tears of joy at not having to watch 9-6 Alabama-LSU.
I love 9-6 LSU-Bama. Oh, my God.
Let's move on. That's my roommate. We have fundamental disagreements in that game. Instead, let's talk about the other New Year's Six matchups. We'll start with one that we both know well, my Florida Gators and your Michigan Wolverines, Jay.
Oh, yes.
12 p.m. in the Peach Bowl in Atlanta, the kickoff of the New Year's Six, which is fitting because the last game of the New Year's Six is probably going to be mostly an offensive showdown, or at least the last game of that night with Oklahoma, Alabama. Meanwhile, Florida and Michigan, I think the over-under will probably be 40, and I think it'll probably stay under.
No, it'll probably be 30, to be honest.
No, there's no way in modern football, just because if you get one stop in opponent territory, you're almost assured to get a field goal or a touchdown now. So, looking at this matchup, I think there is one place that Florida has the advantage. I would say...
And where is that?
Probably passing yards a game. Because they do. Oh, statistically.
It's four more yards, though. It's 217 to 213.
These offenses I think there's this Florida had a bad rap because of how poorly they played in nationally televised games, especially against Missouri and Georgia. The offense was inept. But I mean, hear me out. But in the last three games, Florida's offense doesn't look pretty good. And against South Carolina, they were dead in the first half, and in the second half, offensive coordinators John Hevesy and Billy Gonzalez managed to get Felipe Franks to play out of his mind. Against Idaho, Emory Jones came in and shined as a backup quarterback. And against Florida State, whose defense improved a lot during the season, Florida hung 41 on him, and Felipe Franks ended up turning in a pretty good performance. But even more impressive was the running back core, which is really three strong, if you think about it, between LaMichael Pirine, Jordan Scarlett, and Damian Pierce.
Scarlett's still there?
What is Scarlett is still there.
A seventh-year senior?
Yeah, he's maybe an eighth-year senior, ninth-year senior.
JT Barrett seemed to be at Ohio State for 13 years. Don't get me started.
Apparently, Cardinal Jones was 40 when he graduated.
Good Lord.
So, I think these offenses are pretty evenly matched. Defensively, Michigan has an edge, but I think Florida has been able in big games this season, like the one against LSU, to get its defense to play better than it probably is. So, I'm not sure who exactly is going to end up being better on the defensive side of the ball. It'll probably be Michigan, but again, we saw them give 62 up to Ohio State.
Well, look at it. Even after that Ohio State game, Michigan still has the best defense in the
country. Oh, and Rayshon Gary is not playing, so.
Yes, but he didn't do anything. I mean, he didn't do anything against Ohio State. I think he had like one tackle. That's it. But Michigan, the big question, can they run the ball? And the answer is yes. Caron Higdon, 1,178 yards,
10 touchdowns
as a senior. His last game. He's going to want the ball, and he's going to want it early and often, and he's going to score. Okay? Michigan brings a brand of physical football, even more so than LSU on offense, than Florida's seen all year.
Okay. Okay, this is where I stop you.
Who?
Florida played Elijah Holyfield and DeAndre Swift, got totally gashed in the first half, and held them to under 20 yards in the second half, combined. Elijah Holyfield. Yes.
Because
you're telling me Caron Higdon is better than Elijah Holyfield and DeAndre Swift?
I'm telling you he's better than Holyfield. I'm not saying he's better than Swift. But also, when Michigan wants to run the ball, they run the ball.
Georgia wanted to run the ball in the second half. They had a lead the entire game, and Florida's rush defense stopped them. They had six plays inside the five-yard line and couldn't score. Because
you loaded the box with nine dudes. You literally played one-on-one everywhere except the box and just crammed and said, throw the ball. And they didn't want to throw the ball. Don't know why. But Michigan's going to run the ball, and also one difference between Michigan and Georgia is Michigan has a mobile quarterback. Just ask Wisconsin. Shea Patterson can move. He can move well. Caron Higdon is really good. Ben Gideon, big senior fullback-type player that they bring in for the goal line, he's the real deal in the goal line. Now, middle of the field, he's average. But this dude is like 240. He just runs through holes and scores. And where I get to from here is Michigan's defense. I know Rayshon Gary is not playing. Devin Bush is going to be a top 10 pick. Winovich was a second or a third team, second team All-American. Devin Bush was first team everywhere except for one place. LaVert Hill is really good in secondary.
His name's LaVert, like Karis LaVert, who also went to Michigan? That's convenient.
LaVert Hill is really good. Chris Long is a good opposite side corner. Now, all of you are probably thinking in your head, how in the world did they give up 62 to Ohio State?
Because Dwayne Haskins is really good.
Well, not just that. Ohio State outmatched Michigan with speed on the outside. Brendan Watson, that nickel corner for Michigan. And for those of you who don't know, my mom asked me this all the time. What does nickel mean? Nickel means there are four down defensive linemen, two defensive ends, and two defensive tackles, two linebackers, two corners, two safeties, and then this one nickel cornerback who plays the slot guy, also known as the second guy from the outside on either side of the line of scrimmage, or on either side of the ball. So Brendan Watson got exposed because he's not the fastest dude in the world. He's got really good technique, but he is not the fastest dude in the world. And Ohio State put Paris Campbell on him, who can fly, and just ran right by him. But Florida doesn't have nearly athletes on the outside that Ohio State does. So
Trevon Grimes and Van Jefferson are pretty good, but
we'll see.
Trevon Grimes went to Ohio State.
That's why. No, but you don't have two or three or four dudes like Ohio State does like that.
That's true.
So I think it'll be low scoring. I think it'll be close until the fourth quarter, because what Michigan does is they just ground and pound the ball, and people get tired of stopping the run, and they get lazy with their technique, and then holes get bigger and bigger. You can run a Mack truck in through that hole instead of a minivan. And I think Michigan wins this game by probably 10, 13 points.
So,
I don't know what
if you're going to say low scoring, then what, 27?
No.
24-10?
Give me 27-13.
Okay. My assessment of it is I think Florida is clearly the inferior team coming into this matchup. I think Michigan outmatches them in most places, but I think Florida can rival them when they play well. I am interested to see how Felipe Franks is going to play in an environment like this. In one of his big, in his biggest game of the season, probably against LSU, he was good enough, but still had a lot of big mistakes. That running game really came to save him against LSU, though, and we'll see if they can do it against a rush defense that is better than LSU's rush defense was. But the difference is Florida's running backs have gotten a lot better throughout the year. Damian, as I said, Damian Pierce, Jordan Scarlett, and Michael Pirine are all kind of 500 to 700 yards over a season kind of guys who don't necessarily get the most carries. No one is kind of the gets the lion's share there, but they all contribute a good amount, and especially just kind of like a mini Alabama, so to speak, can hit you with some kind of the fresh leg effect at running back. So I think that Florida will keep it a lot closer than 13. My guess is going to be Michigan 19, Florida 15.
That is the oddest. How in the world are you going to get 19 points?
19? Yeah. Touchdown, four field goals, and then Florida's going to get it with a
four field goals.
Yeah. Or missed it. I don't know. This just has all of the makings of a game that's going to be like 19-15. No, 2016. I'm changing it. 20-16 because Michigan will score twice, get two field goals. Florida will score once, get three field goals because their offense won't be able to pull it out in the red zone, even though Dan Mullen hates when that doesn't happen. So we'll play through the rest of these. Do we need to talk about LSU-UCF? I don't think we do.
Yes.
Are you sure?
Because if
UCF beats LSU without Mackenzie Milton, I think LSU should get kicked out of the SEC immediately.
I think LSU is going to look back at what happened to Auburn last year, albeit to a much better UCF team than what exists right now. Let's be real here. Auburn losing to UCF last year was an embarrassment to both the SEC and Power 5 football as a whole. And LSU just has too many athletes on the field. Devin White is the best athlete in college football. Prove me wrong. Greedy Williams
best is one of the best corners.
Greedy Williams is the best corner in football. Yes, better than DeAndre Baker, who won the Jim Thorpe Award. Grant Delpit is arguably the best DB, or for sure the best safety. I saw something on Instagram a couple days ago. Is Grant Delpit the best DB in college football? So there's three first-round talents right there on defense. And they LSU, albeit their offense is kind of limited, they can run the ball when they want to. UCF looked very, very, very suspect against USF and Memphis without Milton or without Mackenzie Milton, especially on defensive side of the ball. They had to claw back into that game. Were they down 21 points?
Something like that.
Yeah,
but
yeah, that's not happening. You're not coming.
It was
back
Memphis who lost to Tulane, so therefore Tulane is almost as good as UCF. And you know what Tulane is playing in? What is it, the Liberty Bowl?
Whatever it is, it's
being played tomorrow. Oh, the AutoNation Cure Bowl.
It's being played on the 15th.
I have a theory that if you're playing in a bowl game before Christmas, you don't deserve to be in a bowl game, but that's just my thought.
We can talk about that later. But if LSU comes out and
plays angry
and pees in the bed, then we're going to have a problem here. Joe Burrow and
Joe Burrow
and Coach O. But if LSU comes out like they should, how I think they will,
it's going to be a bloodbath.
It's going to get ugly really, really, really quickly.
UCF, I hope you're wearing black unis because it's about to be a funeral. Here's my prediction. I'm going to say LSU 45, UCF 14.
They're not going to. Oh.
They could put
it 45. I'll give it 38. 17? I was about to say 7.
Give them 13.
Not sure? They got nothing to lose. They're not going to kick field goals. Give them 38-7.
Okay. So we'll kind of I don't want to brush over this too much, but the Rose Bowl, I'm sure it'll be a good game.
The Rose Bowl is a scary good matchup, even though A lot of people think Ohio State's going to blow out Washington. It is a really good game that I highly suggest watching. Great pass defense at Washington against a red hot passing offense at Ohio State, who, as a Michigan fan, that was a spectacle to watch in terms of passing game of Ohio State. And then they tore Northwestern apart last week?
Two weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. Ish. Whatever it was. In the Big Ten Championship, tore Northwestern apart, who wasn't bad either. So Washington's got their hands full. Jake Browning, his last game ever, most winning quarterback in Pac-12 history, blah, blah, blah. Miles Gaskin's really good at running back. So I just suggest watching this game. It's always, especially if you live in a snow-filled area, you turn on that TV and the San Gabriel Mountains appear with sun all over them and everything, and just warms your heart, and then you got a good football game to watch. It's my favorite bowl game to watch, even more so than like the Cotton Bowl.
So, score prediction?
Ohio State 35, Washington 24.
I'm going to keep it closer than that. Urban is going to have another heart attack on his hands. Not an actual heart attack. I guess, wish him well or something. I don't know.
Ohio State. Yes, I wish him well.
I don't wish him well because he left Ford and he's a crook and he covered up serial spousal abuse with this program. But, you know, that's beside the point and kind of just some minor details. I don't want to get caught up in those. Unfortunately, in this game, evil wins sometimes. So I'm going to say Ohio State 30.
It's like whenever Duke wins, evil always wins.
I'm going to say Ohio State 38, Washington 34. I think they'll keep it closer. Just because I don't think Ohio State's defense is that good. Now we will talk about the Sugar Bowl between Texas and Georgia. Or should we?
This is going to get ugly. We don't need to talk about this.
Let's score.
Sorry, Staley Weidman or Will Jones, if you're listening, fellow classmates here at Woodbury Forest School. Texas is going to get blown out. There's nothing. There's no ifs, buts, or whats about it.
I don't care.
I care so little about this game. I don't even know what I'm saying. Yes, I do. So, give me.
We gotta get a quote list going. I care so little about this game. I don't even know what I'm saying.
Give me Georgia. 35 came to mind. It's not going to be that much. Give me Georgia. Georgia's going to hang 42 on Texas. Give me 42 to Sue. I was about to say 7. Give me 42-14, Georgia. This is going to get ugly really, really quickly.
34-13. So, as much as I would love to talk college football playoff expansion, we've gone too long already as it is. So I'm going to
eight teams is better.
I am going to table that conversation for later. I'm also writing an article about this right now, so you can read that hopefully in a couple of days. So now it is time for a segment of facts or fake news.
My favorite section besides the band Zip Busters, which I'll implement in the NFL playoffs. Malcolm Jenkins last year's Super Bowl band Zip Buster laying the wood. Mm-hmm. That's what I like to see. Let's get this going.
He should have gotten ejected for targeting. No. All right. So first facts or fake news: Ohio State will be 9-3 or worse in its first season without Urban Meyer. I was going to say 10-2, and I figured they'd go 9-3, so I'm putting you right at the cutoff point for next year.
9-3 or worse?
Yes.
I'll say it's facts. They'll go 9-3. Next year is the year, Michigan fans. We're getting it done. We're getting it done.
Unless Shea Patterson leaves.
We're getting it done. I don't care if he leaves. We're getting it done. It's in Ann Arbor, and if we lose, Jim Harbaugh's got to be on the hot seat. I'm tired of it. This year and 2 years ago were the years, and albeit 2 years ago we got jammed by some referee calls, but this year we got killed. Next year is the year.
All right. Facts or fake news number two. Going for two and the win in the NFL is not a good idea. The Chargers were just another lucky example. Teams should rather play for overtime.
Oh, absolutely not. No. That's fake news. Especially now, if you're the better team, play for overtime. But if you're the underdog, like the Chargers were last night, you roll the dice and go for it. I'll talk about last night. The Chargers
were down 14.
They were down 14. Scored with 8 seconds to go. Or was it 4 seconds? 4 seconds to go. And you've got Patrick Mahomes, NFL or MVP
candidate.
Will be. Yeah, there's no candidacy. He will be the MVP. On the other sideline.
Oh, went three in his three most important games of the season. Just want to point that out. Anyway, continue.
With Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, and now Kelvin Benjamin out of nowhere. in that receiving core. You really want to risk giving them the ball back on a 51-49 coin toss? Yes, it's 50. It's not actually 50-50. Stats class with Coach Holmes, shout out. That's awesome. You really want to risk giving those dudes the ball when you have 3 yards to win the game? Are you kidding me? With how bad that Chiefs defense is? Yes, you go for it every single time. Okay. Now, also on the alternative, Human said, my roommate was playing Luke's roommate, Liam Desmond, in a game of NCAA 14 on the Xbox. Monstead scored with, I think it was 10 seconds to 18. Go. 18 seconds to go. Was down one, went for two, ran for some.
Toss. Toss sweep to the
Right.
Short, I don't know.
Doesn't even know why Hugh called that play. If you're going to go for it, throw it. But
slant.
Run the ball.
Run slant.
No, do not run the ball. I just asked Notre Dame in 2015 in Clemson. It does not work. Next. For it, but throw it.
All right. Facts or fake news number 3. There will be 5 quarterbacks taken in the first round again. Will Greer, Justin Herbert, Dwayne Haskins, Drew Locke, and Daniel Jones, who I have not watched tape on
that
apparently.
Jones is horrible.
Well, he's been put in the top 10 by most mock drafts out there.
He is horrible. Whoever takes that, dude, I'm anti-Duke as it is, but this guy loses to Wake Forest 59-7 at home on
Senior
Day.
I'm not asking you.
I know.
I'm not asking you to say what you think. I'm asking you, do you think there will be 5 quarterbacks taken in the first round again?
No.
You don't think so?
I think Herbert will go probably top 5. Haskins will go top 15. Locke will go top 25. Greer will slip into the first round. And then, I don't know. Somebody's got to be a scarecrow to take Daniel Jones in the first round. You've got to have no brain.
My problem with this draft class is I think there's this idea with how historically good last year's was.
Was fantastic.
Coming into the season, I didn't think Baker would be that good. I'm totally wrong on that. Baker Mayfield has proved me entirely wrong.
Yes.
I don't think he has as high a ceiling, but I think that he's going to be the most consistent for the next 2 or 3 years while these babies like Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold. Are developing. And Lamar Jackson, I mean, who would have thought that he'd be 3-0?
Me.
In his first, I mean, that was absolutely unbelievable. And I think the tendency we get with the NFL is when you have a really good draft class at quarterback, you want to think, oh, well, you know, these guys are just as good. But I don't think any of these 5 guys, except maybe Haskins or Herbert,
Justin Herbert is a baller.
Because I think there are, honestly, and you can call me insane here, but I think there are 3 guys out of the quarterback draft class from last year who are rookies right now who could end up in the Hall of Fame.
Who?
Baker can end up in the Hall. I mean, I think they're guys who are going to be at least getting discussion.
Who? Baker and who?
Darnold and Rosen once they develop. And
Darnold?
They have such terrible talent around them.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. You got to have talent around you.
I know. And I'm saying they'll get them by sucking for the next couple of years and then probably become like 8-8, 9-7.
See, you can't be a Hall of Famer sucking for a few years, Stone. You got to pick it up.
Really?
Sam Darnold leads the league in interceptions right now.
Yeah, well, is Cam Newton a Hall of Famer? Because he threw 4 against the Buccaneers defense.
He's not a Hall of Famer.
Okay.
So I'm going to say fake news to 5 quarterbacks.
I'm
going to
say facts. I think there will be. I don't think there should be. I don't think these guys are nearly as good as the guys, or don't look nearly as ready, except maybe Justin Herbert. Justin Herbert has is he reminds me of Baker Mayfield because of how incredibly accurate he is.
No, when I watched Oregon play Stanford in the regular season a couple weeks ago, he reminded me so much of Marcus Mariota. Because I go back and watch Marcus Mariota college film all the time. And Justin Herbert, he got in a rhythm in the first quarter, like right off the bat, and was looking as good, if not even a little bit better, than Mariota did when he won the Heisman Trophy. I mean, it was a spectacle.
The problem
was
that
throwing the ball.
Oregon didn't have enough around him to make him a true Heisman kid.
Yes.
Candidate, but he could have been.
Throw him on throw him on Michigan, and they win a national championship. I fully believe it. So, I think it's fake news. Whoever takes Daniel Jones, fire the GM. Let's just get him already out of here. I'm serious.
So I'm gonna archive this for freezing cold takes just in case Daniel Jones ends up.
If he ends up as a Hall of Famer, somebody, I would give you, I don't know, $20 if he ends up as a Hall of Famer.
All right.
But God knows, fire that GM, whoever takes them.
Facts or fake news, I guess this is number 3. Yeah. 1, 2. Yeah, 3 does come after 1 and 2. That's correct.
1, 2, 3.
Facts or fake news number 3, last night's performance, or I guess Thursday night's performance from Kyle Kuzma against the Lakers cements him as kind of the number 2 option.
For the Lakers.
Sorry, for the Lakers. I'm sorry. Kyle Kuzma's performance for the Lakers last night against the Rockets cements Kuzma as kind of the real gritty number two behind LeBron James on that roster.
Well, he already was. So yeah.
You don't think Brandon Ingram was ever in that role?
No.
They went Kuzma. Brandon Ingram got more attention because he has been so bad the last 2 years, and he's actually doing pretty well this year. That they're like, oh, he's actually playing to his potential. Well, Kuzma. Okay, I'll try and do this with words. If Brandon Ingram is 3 inches off the ground and was about 2 inches off the ground last year, Kuzma's sitting at about six. LeBron's at like 6 feet above the ground in terms of like
improvement
where they are. It's close, but Kuzma, athletically, he's stronger, taller, more athletic, and can get to the rim a lot.
I think he's just more reliable. I think he's a lot more level-headed than these other guys are. Alonzo, you're always going to have the baggage that comes with him and just kind of the childlike shenanigans with the the diss track war, and Kuzma responded last year with that, but I think he's proven to be a lot more mature this season, and I think he understands that, you know, it's serious now that you have a top three player all time without argument on your roster now. So, final facts or fake news. I don't have this one written down. This is totally on the fly. Last night's performance shows that the Patriots are probably still going to make it the Super Bowl.
No.
You don't think so?
Absolutely not. The Patriots would lose to either of those AFC West teams.
Well, I'm pretty sure the Patriots beat the Chiefs earlier this year.
I know they beat the Chiefs. But also, New England's not going to have home field advantage anymore.
It's going to run through the StubHub Center.
It's going to run through Arrowhead. And I know the Chiefs have lost six in a row in Arrowhead in the playoffs.
I know a certain Jacob Geiger that's particularly distraught by the Chiefs' lack of success recently in the playoffs.
Oh, yes.
He told me that the season is so troubling because it's one of those years like, oh my gosh, this is it for the Chiefs. And he knows he's just waiting for playoff disappointment in the first or second round in Arrowhead.
The Patriots, yes. But to answer your question, the Patriots will not make the Super Bowl. I hate to burst anybody's bubble, but I just don't see it happening.
I'm going to say facts. I don't know how Tom Brady's going to get outdueled by either Patrick Mahomes or Phillip Rivers. Phillip Rivers is really good, Mahomes but I think can ball. I mean playing in the
My
StubHub.
My God, Mahomes can ball.
Well, turned the ball over four times, three times.
Three times, but he also scored 50 points.
I think that
on the Rams defense with the two best defensive tackles of football.
All right, the Rams defense is very good. I think they're way overhyped. They're probably still the best in the NFL, maybe, but I don't know if they're good enough.
Now,
all right, that's
now. Hold on, let me call me crazy. Super Bowl matchup: Chiefs Cowboys. Watch Cowboys. Amari Cooper is the second coming. I'll finish with that. We got a good dinner.
I'm not gonna dispute that because it's not worth the energy because the Cowboys are not going to make the NFC Championship, much less win the Super Bowl.
I will beat the Saints in New Orleans.
Okay, yeah, that doesn't happen in nature. All right, that's all we have for you today for this episode of Stone Cold Sports Talk after our once again extended hiatus because it's so hard to get me and Jay in the same room at the same time now. Thank you all so much for listening. Keep an eye out for predictions for other bowl games, hopefully, in the coming days. We appreciate your listening. That's all for this time. I'm Luke Stone.
I'm Jay Banzette.
So long.